Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Leistico. I have the Des Moines Register with Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. Kennington, Hawkeyes win 24-10 over Wisconsin. I just scratched my head once again at what we're seeing with this team. I mean, I'm seeing a team with 146 yards of total offense and kind of dominate the game, right? Isn't that what happened tonight?
It's crazy, but it's true.
What's your reaction to this? I mean, craziness is happening right now, and Dargan, our producer, just asked me before we went on. He's like, this team's going to win the West Division, isn't it? And I was like, it kind of looks that way.
Probably. What a difference a month makes. I mean, this is incredible. I mean, if I would have told you on our Wednesday radio show that Iowa was going to rush for, check stats, 52 yards of offense, they would have 11 first downs, and Spencer Petras would throw for 94 yards. The offensive line would give up six sacks. You probably would think that Wisconsin blew them out, but that wasn't the case. I mean, it was a crazy game. Everybody in all three phases contributed something, and complimentary football is a staple of this program. And for the majority of this season, the defense has obviously chipped in their part. Special teams hasn't been elite consistently, but they have had elite moments in certain games. The Iowa State game is one that really sticks out to me. But the offense has lagged behind. I feel like these three wins, you can point to it and say every unit had a moment. And that's what happened again today. It was not pretty by any means. And the players and Kirk Ferentz said as much. They weren't up there, speaking so confidently as to they dominated this game. They knew that there were some lulls in all three phases. But at the end of the day, everybody made the necessary plays in order to win. And that's the most important thing. And you look up, and Illinois lost to Purdue today, and they have to go to Michigan next week. And Iowa has a formidable challenge themselves in Minnesota, who I believe won today, and they're 7-3. So it's going to be a tough challenge for Iowa as well. But there is a path to a Big Ten West title. It's not clear and it's not linear because them winning out doesn't equal a Big Ten West championship. But there is a much clearer picture in getting there than there was this time yesterday.
Oh yeah, I mean, for starters, if they do win out, they do at least tie for the title. I mean, they might lose a tiebreaker if Illinois were to win out, but and the only other team that could tie with them if Iowa wins out and Illinois loses next week would be Purdue, which beat Illinois today, but obviously Iowa has the head-to-head victory against the Boilermakers from last week, which was also very resounding. That was, you look at, I know that everyone's going to scoff at the offensive numbers here, but to me, once again, it's just a matter of this offense doesn't have to do much. Now, I know it was bad. I mean, six sacks, bad, and the rushing stats are obviously influenced by the six sacks. So you subtract the 42 yards, Kennington, off the rushing total, and as far as just actual carries go. So 42 yards of sacks off Petras, which was six sacks and one scramble. So take away seven carries and 42 yards. And Iowa had 38 rushing attempts for 94 yards. That's still not awesome, but they held the ball for 33 and a half minutes today. And that's a credit, that is a credit to the defense, obviously getting off the field, creating a plus two turnover margin, not to mention the block punt. But you talked about even third down conversions. Iowa just got enough of those, they got enough of those, 6 for 19, and plus a fourth down conversion late. And then, like you said, getting the red zone conversions. I mean, they got two short fields, touchdown drives. Their only two touchdown drives were 17 and 18 yards, which is funny. But it's they got seven. They got seven out of that, and that was huge. And so you got to give them a little credit for that, and not worry about the. At this point, you can't be worried about the numbers, and just be. To me, it's just like you got a great defense, great special teams, and Offense got you enough points today as well.
Yeah. And I know we're going to do three word headlines later, but I sent in a submission myself and it was offense did enough. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, again, it was not pretty, and you can scoff at the numbers. And I wrote about in the NC analysis that the offensive line played bad today. Yep. The offense for 98% of the game looked really bad, but situationally they were excellent today. And you can go back to that Illinois game where Jack Campbell gives them the ball on that Torrey Taylor punt and the offense does nothing with it. And then they get the forced fumble and the ball gets put on the 4 yard line and they couldn't punch it into the end zone. So the fact that we're here a month later and the offense was put pretty much in the exact same situation, right, special teams puts them in a spot to go score a touchdown and they did it, shows improvement. That's really all that fans have been asking for, is just improvement on offense anywhere. And if they're in a position to score a touchdown, that they put it into the end zone. And that's what the offense did. And I also thought you had a great point on Twitter about the field goal drive at the end of the game where it was like 11 plays and they didn't gain many yards.
27 yards,
but they ate up almost 5 minutes of the clock. Again, that is situationally excellent. Football killed the clock. Wisconsin had to burn all their timeouts, and then you kick the field goal, go up 14. So in those spurts, those three spurts, again, 98% of the game, they were terrible. But those three instances that amounts to 2%, you came out with 17 points, which was enough to win the game, even without Cooper DeJean's pick six. So offense obviously wasn't great. Sam LaPorta talked about how bad they were on first down, how they consistently played behind the six. Kirk said that the offensive line took a step back today. I think that goes without saying. Everybody who saw the game saw that. But at the end of the day, they battled. Nick Herbig wasn't as big of a factor in the second half as he was in the first half. I mean, he was terrorizing them early. And then, this did some things to go away from him, and he didn't have as big of an impact as the game went on. So they made some adjustments, and, the stat sheet wasn't pretty. But at the end of the day, they won the game. So offense passes today is a D a passing grade? You're a parent. Is that a passing grade?
Yeah, I mean, it technically it is.
Technically. Yeah. So they either get a D, or like a C minus with a 71. But
yeah,
they passed. So
yeah. Well, let's talk about D Gene and the D line. I know we have some questions about the D line dominance. So let's just kind of go back to front here on defense, because the defense will be the topic of my column. That I have yet to write, but the topic of my first topic of my thoughts, made the decision early to lead with Cooper DeJean, and it held up. He added a 42-yard punt return to help my story even more later in the game. I still think Jack Campbell's the best player in this team, but is Cooper the second best player in this team? Or would you even make an argument that he's the best player in this team for everything he does? I mean, he can play safety, cornerback, cash, punt return, gunner on punts to down it at the one. I mean, and then like Kirk said, I mean, he could play on offense if, he had the wherewithal. And by the way, folks, Cooper said, yeah, he does get pretty tired out there. Yeah. he's playing a physical style at corner. He's stopping the run. I'm almost talking myself into saying he's the best player on the team.
Yeah, it's a discussion for sure. I mean, he is in that top group of players. And I think someone said it in the post game that in addition to scoring points by yourself on defense, having 10 tackles, which was the second most on the team, he also, for a period of time, almost the entire game, outgained Iowa's offense with his punt returns and his pick six return. And it's just, I mean, it's incredible what he could do. I mean, you go back to last year and he was running scout team receiver at times. And so he had the ability to go on offense and help them out that way. So he's just a weapon in so many ways. And his story is just pretty incredible when you think about what he did in high school across multiple sports. And, Kirk Ferentz is at the post game today saying, basically had no offers. No one was really recruiting him like that. And we we're fortunate to get in there and get him into our program. And you kind of see how he has continued to ascend. And you think about the conversation of best player, it's remarkable that he is really in his first year of significant playing time compared to like a Jack Campbell or a Sam Laporta or whoever else you would put into the best player on the team, Riley Moss, best player on the team conversation. So true sophomore in that mix, he is only going to continue to improve and continue to ascend. And Kirk threw some pretty lofty comparisons out there when talking about him today. He said probably like Micah Hyde is probably the closest thing that he's seen. And I didn't see much of Micah Hyde when he was at Iowa, but I know who he is in the NFL. So to compare him to Micah is huge. And it's just so fun to watch him play. I mean, it's literally highlight reel stuff almost weekly now where he's just doing something, you know, in all different positions. And Kayvon said it today. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he said, athlete at cash, athlete at corner. You see him on special teams. And he said that he played safety in fall camp, and we haven't seen that yet, but he was great there too. So it's really no telling where exactly he's going to fit in terms of future position on the defense, but he's just kind of a all-around utility weapon, and he's going to, you know, trajectory-wise, probably going to go down as one of the better players in Kirk's era, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what a luxury to have a guy like that when Terry Roberts really has played one Big Ten game this season, and Cooper has played corner because of that, taking him out of the cash position that he essentially can probably thrive at the most, because, you know, you put that player's closer to the line of scrimmage. We've seen that position make a lot of plays, but he's doing it now from corner. And obviously it helps that teams aren't going after Riley Moss as much, so he's getting more action. But yeah, he said on the pick six, he kind of actually got beat. He was in man coverage on that, but then he recovered when Mertz kind of, you know, made that throw. It was a terrible throw, obviously, by Mertz, or ill-advised throw, I should say. But I think Cooper kind of baited him into it by accidentally getting beat right out of the gate, but he's enough of an athlete to recover from it. I thought, honestly, the downing of the punt, at the 1 yard line, this game lacked good directional punting most of the time. I mean, Torrey Taylor was hitting touchbacks, so was their punter, or he was hitting bad balls, and I even tweeted about it, and I've heard about it since. And then he hits this 58-yard punt, which he gets all this credit for. But Cooper, being a gunner, like, he confused the punt returner. That's the reason the guy didn't catch the ball. It was all Cooper, right? To me, that's what I saw. I mean, Cooper is so good that he made the punt returner hesitate in terms of whether he was going to catch the football at the 18-yard line. Then the ball rolls over, you know, over and over. This is in a 14-10 game, folks. It's a tight game at this point. And then the ball skips into the end zone, but Cooper jumps in the air, catches it, flips it back to Jamison Hines, teammate who he knows is going to be standing there at the 1 yard line. Iowa gets the stop. Cooper then returns the punt off that short field, 42 yards, to the 18-yard line for that 18-yard touchdown drive. To me, the downing of the punt was almost the most impressive of all of them, because it's just such an athletic play, and they needed to pin them back at that point. And last thing on him, Kennington, going through rivals now, his other offers were from Illinois State, North Dakota State, Northern Iowa, South Dakota State.
That's crazy.
I mean, obviously,
and
it's not like he committed like 3 years early. Like, he committed after his junior year.
Yeah, and I mean, and I say that's crazy because it's like, I mean, obviously no disrespect to FCS programs, but you just look at what he did in high school. I mean, his list of accomplishments will probably take the rest of this podcast. And to not think that not one other Power 5 school even offered him that's wild. But, that's kind of what Iowa does. They just find these diamonds in the rough, and they get them into their program, develop them, turn them into stars. So, you know, just another feather in the cap in that way of how they do their recruiting. And, he's turning into a star, and he has a very legitimate case for a Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year.
Yeah, definitely. It's either him or John Torchio of Wisconsin, and I would think – if you saw the game, if anybody watched the game today and is going to cast his ballot, who had the bigger impact on the Iowa-Wisconsin game? I mean, yeah. Both guys have two pick sixes. So, it's going to be a competition there. But yeah, crazy. All right. We're kind of blowing through some time here. So, but well worth it. Let's move up to the front of the defense. What impressed you the most about the front seven, Kennington? I tweeted this early in the game, even when it was 3-0 Wisconsin. I was like, the great news, guys, is this Wisconsin can't run against Iowa. So you really just need one or two plays from this defense, like big plays, to turn this in Iowa's favor. And then, like, not long right after that, Iowa got the block punt from Deontay Craig.
Right. I mean, the defensive line is just continuing to ascend. And it's a group that had a lot of veterans and they have some youthful talent. And you know, the conversation going back to the spring through the summer to now is, will those veterans take the necessary step forward to make this three units of elite players? Like, you knew the secondary was going to be really good coming into the year, even though they lost a lot of players. Obviously, the linebacker core came back intact. You knew they were going to be elite. And you knew that there were good players on the defensive line, but there wasn't that, you know, Chauncey Golston or Davion, like a big name on the defensive line, who was going to emerge in that group, or would it just be kind of a committee? And everybody on the defensive line has had moments throughout the season, and it's just kind of culminating to a point now where it's anybody on the defensive line could kind of have that breakout game. We've seen Joe Evans have those type of games. We've seen Lucas Van Ness obviously have those type of games. Deontay Craig was the one today with the block punt and play really well on the defensive line as well. But I was just really impressed with how a group that is largely undersized really just kind of controlled the line of scrimmage. They didn't allow Wisconsin to get a lot of push. And you look at Braylon Allen, Wisconsin's running back, who had 100 yards in 14 of 18 games. He finishes today with 40 yards rushing. They held Wisconsin to 51 yards rushing. I mean, that is an incredible feat. So much so that Iowa actually outrushed Wisconsin. For as much as we talked about Iowa's struggles on the offensive line, they actually outrushed Wisconsin. So that's a testament to how the defensive line plays. So I'm just really impressed with them, really impressed with the coaching job of Kelvin Bell and Jay Neiman. And, you know, this is an Iowa defense that, again, I would defer this question to you. I mean, where does this defense rank in Kirk Ferentz's tenure? I think we're at that point now where you see defensive lines obviously playing at an elite level right now. The back seven has always been really good. And then now you see them all just kind of like working in tandem in these last three games. And it really just kind of makes you take a step back and think to yourself, you know, this is we might be witnessing something historic here. And I don't know about and this is my last point on this, as far as when they announced the Broyles Award, which is for the nation's top assistant coach. I don't know when they do finalists or when they announce all of that, but I feel like Phil Parker has to be strongly considered for that honor based on what this defense has done this year.
Yeah, it's his best defense to me. I mean, he's had a top 10 defense most of the last 5-6 years. I asked Kirk Ferentz that question. I mean, when have you gone into game? Have you had this feeling where you've gone into games, you know your defense is going to be elite and you really don't have to do that much on offense to get the win? And he said, yeah, that's a factor. He said, excuse me, kind of felt that way in 2004. So that's kind of when he went back to. That was a team that didn't have much of an offense at all. And Drew Tate kind of made some things happen. And, they averaged like 2 yards a carry that year, like seriously 2 yards a carry. It's hard to believe, Kenny, but it's true. And then they went 10-2 and beat Nick Saban in the Cap One Bowl and tied for a Big Ten regular season championship with Michigan. So, that's what he went back to. And now Iowa has a chance to amazingly, Kennington, go back to Indianapolis with just two more wins. Probably. I mean, I'm gonna say the way Illinois is playing, they're not gonna win at Michigan next week.
Yeah,
I feel pretty good about that.
That's a safe bet.
Anything could happen in football, obviously, but I feel good about that at this point. So win out and you get that defensive opportunity again, like you said during our pod this week, to face either Ohio State or Michigan again. And you got that one chance before. The defense kind of had pluses and minuses in both games, but I think you like where this group is ascending on that front. Before we get to three-word headlines, a little side story out of today. I mean, Caden Proctor visits Oregon today. I do not think it's anything to worry about, but we know Iowa has its no-visit policy. But Kirk Ferentz has, you know, articulated in the past, you know, as long as the athlete's up front, you surely understand it. And obviously somebody of that magnitude, if he wants to take that visit, right, all power to him. I mean,
yeah,
you're not gonna pull a scholarship offer. I mean, that'd be the absolute dumbest thing Kirk Ferentz could do.
Yeah.
To prove a point here. But personally, like I don't know anything, you know, it's not like I'm texting Caden Proctor right here, but it's not something I'm like super concerned about. You know, I expect him to be here and to see Iowa needs a starting right tackle next year in January.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit on the other end of the spectrum just for this reason. I know that he was planning on being an early enrollee at Iowa, and he did cancel a lot of officials over the summer and kind of like nailed this down. So for Oregon to kind of swoop in and kind of get a late official in November, signing day is next month, I feel like there has to be some sort of momentum there to sway him in that direction. So I would be concerned on that front. And they've kind of recruited well. I mean, they have Dante Moore, five-star quarterback. They signed the number one tackle, I think, in the last class. So they've had a little bit of offensive recruiting success. Obviously, Kyler Casper as well was somebody that Iowa wanted in Oregon, was able to nab him. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, in recruiting, you kind of follow the visits. So this one kind of late in the cycle, at least like for me, would be a little concerning if I was an Iowa fan. But, you know, he could pop up on campus for the Nebraska game and it could be an all's well that ends well type of situation. But in better recruiting news, Iowa did get Jared Bowie today from Jesuit in Florida, which is a really good program in the Tampa area. So got a receiver skill position. Kelton Copeland talked about the difficulties of that this week, and he ends up with a commit after the win. So there's some highs and there's some lows in Iowa recruiting today.
Yeah, I appreciate your perspective on that. I mean, I'm not trying to like ease concerns, and then I don't think at the same time Kennington's trying to worry. We just don't know. We don't know for sure. But I mean, given how bad Iowa's offense is, you know, if that, maybe there'll be some collateral damage to that in the recruiting cycle. But we'll see. But like you said, you know, they pick up a commitment at receiver tonight, 6'3" guy from where Dane Belton went to high school. Obviously, they have those connections there. We got to move because post game took forever. And we got to get to three-word headlines, right? And I haven't looked at them yet, but we have 500-ish again. So a lot to go through. If you see any that you like, I'm going to use this one from Chris Bryant right away. We're going bowling.
Good one.
Iowa grabs the bowl, you know, the bowl trophy, Heartland trophy, elusive trophy. You know, Wisconsin won 8 of the last 10, but should mention Iowa is bowl eligible now. That, you know, can't discount that, 6-4.
Yeah. I got two right off the bat. This one from Sean Roberts, our friend at KXNO. Iowa jumps around. Yeah, Iowa got the nub and they played jump around in the post game. So got the win and rubbed a little salt in the room. Mm-hmm. And this one from Lisa Donlinger, very talented violinist, big fan of the Hawkeyes. Hawkeyes in November.
Yeah, 13 in a row now for Iowa. And it's something Jack Campbell talked about after the game as well. And yes, it is impressive. You have to give Iowa credit, especially the way it's not always pretty, but they do fight for 60 minutes. I think as a Hawkeye fan, that's worth appreciating that you're seeing a team fight to the finish and be disciplined. I don't know how many of you guys caught the Illinois-Purdue game, but that was a mess of like undisciplined play. Neither one of those teams looked like they were, you know, championship level, the way they were kind of melting down in key moments and whatnot. So anyway, it's a little side story there. It's just sort of, to me, I think Iowa's playing the best of any team in the West right now. So crazy to say, Wisconsin might be second.
Yeah.
Max Rebo says, Mertz donut. You wrote about Graham Mertz coming into this game, Kennington, and would we get good Graham Mertz or bad Graham Mertz? I'm going to say Iowa forced him to be bad Graham Mertz.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of errant throws today. I'll just put it like that. And there were some errant throws that somehow a Wisconsin receiver came down with, balls that were like in the air for a long time you thought would be picked, and they came up with it. 16 for 35, 176 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. That's about the best that you can hope for if you're Iowa, because Graham Mertz has played improved this year for sure. But they were able to force him into uncharacteristic play, just like they did to Aiden O'Connell, and to some degree what they've done to CJ Stroud and some others throughout this year. This one from Brandon Walker: we love trophies.
Amen. Got, yeah.
Lost the two to go. Trophy, but got this one, two more to go, and there could be a Big Ten West trophy at the end of the road, depending on what happens.
Yeah. Andres Tejada says corn over cheese. I like that one. A little bit unique twist there.
This one from our friend Rick Brown, having a little fun with the fans: fire Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah. Again, Scott Docterman had a good question late in the press conference to Kirk about after the Ohio State game. You know, remember Kirk said he was confident that they would turn this thing around. And to beat the three teams in succession that have given you the most fits over the last 5 to 6 to 10 years in Northwestern, Purdue, and Wisconsin, and to do it in the fashion that they've done it. Math in my head, let's do it quick. They won by 21 and 14. So yeah, 55 points, combined margin of almost 18.3 points per game. That's it's pretty good.
This one from John McClure, which is a good segue into what's going to happen next week. Who hates Minnesota? ?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. Excuse me. And we'll talk about this probably all week, but Mohamed Ibrahim has 19, I believe, straight. It's either 18 or 19 straight 100-yard rushing games. I think he rushed for 178 today. So talk about a test. Can you keep him under 100?
Yeah.
It's to a long time ago.
Yeah. Here's one from Wesley at name 7UpWest: Cooper Moss Show. Two corners who had really good games today. And Riley Moss continuing his good play from last week, where they were just targeting him constantly against Purdue. Made him pay, dropped a few picks that he, you know, would have liked to have. And then today got his pick. And a funny moment in the post game. You asked Kayvon Merriweather what happened on that busted play, and he just got this smile on his face, and he said, "Have y'all interviewed Riley yet?" And I guess we told him like we weren't gonna talk to him today or whatever. And Kayvon was like, "Yeah, just ask Riley about that next time you see him."
We'll have to request him, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, I got a good one, a good gift one from Dream 511, the Kirk Cousins gift, a gift. You like that? You like that? with these got Kirk Cousins walking through, where he's basically yelling that to the media.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I do like that.
Yeah, I like it. And I like the players popping it. Like, if I was Spencer Peaches or anybody on the offense, really anybody on the team, and, you know, you try to block the outside noise as much you can, but at the end of the day, these are young people, 18 to 22-year-olds. Like, they have phones. They see what's on Twitter and Instagram or whatever. To hear all like the negativity, and then to kind of get on a win streak, and all of a sudden you have a chance to kind of win the division. If they want to kind of show a little bravado with some confidence and some swagger after winning some games, I have no problem with it, because a month ago that wasn't there, and that's what the fans were hoping to see. So I have no problems with the players popping it, and I'm sure it's only going to intensify if Iowa keeps rolling.
Yeah, let's wrap up. Good headlines, everyone. Feel free to scroll through those mentions. We gotta get back to writing, but we appreciate you guys tuning in. I guess my Let's just do one parting thought each. I'm going to say, the thought, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit because the Minnesota game is going to be tough. But the thought of trying to go against Michigan and Ohio State again is a little bit daunting, knowing this offense, the challenges this offense is facing. But again, with the defense like this, you almost feel like you've got a chance if you can just get there. And man, what a great, I mean, just think to yourself, if to even just have that chance. What if they win? Yeah, what if they go to Indy and win it? I mean, it would be like the – it's just almost mind-blowing to think about what the – I think this was the fourth game this season they've been held under 200 yards.
Mm-hmm. And
to make it to Indy – I mean, just to get to Indy with a season like that is beyond unbelievable.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, last thought, Kennington Smith, and then well, he'll take you out.
Yeah, man, I really don't want to end on a negative note, but I feel like I have to. I feel like my biggest thought right now is just, you know, what is going to come of the offensive line and the offense going into next week. It felt like two games in a row where there was some progress. This was an obvious step back, despite the fact that they capitalized on certain situations. So how is the offense going to pick themselves up off the mat again, particularly the offensive line that had a rough day today, and go out to Minnesota and try to get a win? I mean, I don't want to say that they can't win at Minnesota playing like this offensively, but it is not going to be easy to replicate this exact type of offensive performance and expect to get a win. So I'll be really interested to see how the offense readjusts and recalibrates for next week.
Thanks, Kennington. Thank you to our viewers. We will talk to you Tuesday on the YouTube podcast. Appreciate y'all.